So welcome.
Thank you guys for being here.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for being here.
So to the band, had you seen the movie in the theater before today?
The very first time it was at a place called the EMP, which wasn't the cut that we saw today, but we saw it with a lot of family and friends and locals, and Cameron came up, and that was the first time we were watching it. And so that was a theater. And then after that, we would just watch the different edits as we worked together and it came through. But today was much different, and to see it with a real audience and people that weren't friends and family. I think that's what gave it a sense of feeling like it was actually pretty damn good.
So Cameron, I'll start with you. I mean, you think of great movies about music, great rock and roll films, they focus on a particular show or a small period of time.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking this emotional journey over 20 years with the band and the fans.
Yeah.
That seems like a huge thing to try to tackle in 2 hours. I mean, how do you grapple with that?
I was really inspired by No Direction Home, the Scorsese documentary on Bob Dylan. And that's a huge subject that spans a long time. And I just love the way Scorsese, as a fan and as a musicologist and as a director, chose the chunk that he chose, examined the roots, and showed how the music was born. And I felt so satisfied and inspired, I wanted to listen to more Bob Dylan, and it felt like a Bob Dylan experience. So that was kind of my guiding light in making the movie with the guys. It's like if we can make a movie that lets you feel the way a Pearl Jam concert or record lets you feel, then we're in good shape.
Mm-hmm. But a Pearl Jam concert or record has a different, I mean, the concert certainly has a different set list every night. You've got
right. You've
got one movie, one group of songs that are telling the story. I mean,
yeah.
How do you guys feel about that?
I feel like that the songs were diverse enough to show what our set list is like every night. And in the movie, they were very, first of all, it sounded great, you know, and that's what you want out of a concert anyways, is to have I feel like I've kind of just been through a concert, you know, a little bit without sweating, but emotionally, certainly, I feel like that. It was a ride that was fantastic. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it seems like you're a band that basically has always let the music do the talking, and it makes it kind of clear in the movie it's for, you know, protective reasons, among other things. To Stone or Jeff, since you were there at the beginning, I mean, what did it take to get you to say, okay, come on in, Cameron, we'll open up to do a movie?
I just think Cameron's interest in doing it was the biggest inspiration. I don't think we would have taken this thing on had it not been all the pieces that fit together, and I think Cameron just, you know, being open to the task of looking through all this footage and seeing if there's a story to be told, or what's the right story to be told, or sort of how does it really make a great movie, and how does it represent sort of the feeling that he has for the band. I think once we knew he was involved, then we just sort of trusted that it was going to be okay, you know. So without Kelly and Cameron sort of, you know, having a vision for it, I don't think, you know, we probably wouldn't have made it for another 20 years. It would have been a while, probably.
Yeah.
And we don't get to hang out with Cameron that often, so it was sort of an excuse to hang out with Cameron a little bit. I mean, he's one of the great people to be in the corner of the room with, talking music and movies and art with, so that was a bonus, added bonus to this whole process.
So when he showed up on the Seattle scene in the, what was it, mid-80s?
Yeah, mid-80s.
You guys let him in right away?
I met Stone and Jeff first. We were researching the idea of doing a movie based in Seattle about people, some of whom were musicians, and I met Stone and Jeff, and I loved so much that Stone and Jeff were guys that had jobs and also played in bands. It wasn't like the LA experience, which is like, yeah, I live with my girlfriend, she pays for everything, I play at night, sleep all day. These guys are like, we pull espresso, we do this, we do that, and then we earn the experience to pay for our love, which is playing music and buying instruments and doing it. And so I met these guys and thought they were a great example of people who love music and chose to make music their purpose in life really responsibly and passionately. And it, like, loving their music came from knowing and loving them as guys first.
Mm-hmm. So were there things that you guys saw in the movie that you'd forgotten about? I mean, it's amazing the kind of footage you dug up. There must have been some moments for some of you where you thought, oh, I don't remember that.
Backstage at the Cult Show, for sure. This kind of one of the shots that opens the film. I mean, first time I saw that, I was like, where was that? I mean, Josh obviously was shooting that footage, but I didn't remember Josh being there. And to sort of have a memory of something in your head that's probably drifted away from really what happened, you know, as time goes on, as you tell the stories about. Because during that time, we took guys from the Cult down to the Vogue, and I remember Lars showed up, and so I tell that story a lot. And then to all of a sudden get pulled back to really what it was like was pretty shocking. Like, I didn't know I wore hats like that.
Yeah, I mean, were there moments for any of you? I mean, we'll you know, go down to Matt at the end of the table. I mean, were there moments that you cringed watching it, or you thought, oh, I wish you didn't have that in?
Yeah, Stone and I were commenting on I wore PJ pants for one show. Like, I had these long PJ pants. I was like,
Pearl
I never
pants?
Wear PJ pants when
no,
I play
actual pajamas.
Like, so that was a surprise. I normally wear shorts.
See, when you're Matt Cameron, that's about as bad as it can get. Like,
so were there finds when you were combing through all of this footage that were particularly, you know, great? Like, oh, you know, it was great that you got this. And was there like a holy grail that you couldn't find?
No, the holy grail really was the piece of footage of Kurt Cobain and Eddie slow dancing at the VMAs. That had been talked about. Some people didn't quite remember it even happening. Other people swore there was somebody there with a camera. So with the help of the people that had the footage and some people that really wanted to help us get everything, we did find that footage, and it's so powerful. I was watching it again tonight. It's just such a human moment, and it is what happens outside the glare of the spotlight. They were really in a blender of media explosiveness at that time, and so here was this moment below the stage while Eric Clapton is playing Tears in Heaven where Kurt and Eddie got to be alone and kind of express themselves as people, and the fact that it was on film is amazing, and it's so poignant. We also had a million concerts that had been filmed, and I think the guys hadn't put a lot of it out, and then they were great enough at a certain point. Jeff says the movie kind of snuck up on them because we've been working on it for so long. At a certain point, we started calling saying, gee, we'd like to do some interviews and like do them in your house so that they're personal and they feel like a conversation. So we started doing those interviews. And the guys really opened the door for us to look in all the nooks and crannies and see whatever we could find. And that's why I think we're lucky enough to have so many different things from so many areas of their lives, very little of which had been seen. Mm-hmm.
Eddie, what did you remember of that Kurt Cobain moment?
Well, not that I had remembered it, but I saw it today for the first time, that the segment, maybe it was a little longer in the cut than what I had seen before, but it was, for a second the camera gets blurry or someone walks in front, and then actually you see Kurt look over and, you know, go like this, and it's not saying, like, don't tell anybody, or you know, keep a lid on this little private moment. It actually was because, again, on the stage above us, Eric Clapton was playing Tears of Heaven, which is a pretty quiet song, and we were jumping up and down and clapping and all that. So the first time I saw that footage, it was incredibly emotional. I think just because he's smiling. And, you know, you just think that if he just could have pulled through. And You know, that's the thing about today. You know, maybe it's good that this movie kind of happened now, or not that we didn't. We've been in grateful mode and appreciation mode of each other for, I think, quite some time. You know, the last few years, I think, has been a real graceful period for us. But it really does kind of, it's a galvanizing kind of moment to look at each other, and it doesn't happen that often. You know, you look at all the crowd reaction, or the family of the family that is the people that come to see the shows, and it's just music, it's just guitars and drums and bass, and it's something that, to have it turn into this other thing, this kind of monument in a way, and it sounds like we're self, I don't mean to self-grandize, but it's really something to see it and witness it, and in this case be reminded of it, have it right there in front of us so we can appreciate it even more, and know that we have a really strong base to, like, go the next 20.
I would think It's Just Music is probably, I mean, I would think your goal always was to get beyond It's Just Music and push it to somewhere else.
But it's like catching a butterfly. You know, you can't grab it too hard. You can't just, you know, it's really a delicate thing. And these aren't just, you know, these are like five men who used to be teenagers or who met in their 20s. And, you know, if you've ever tried to order a pizza with five people, it's difficult. So to have gone to this other level of being able to, you know, create records and songs that are different than the last songs that you'd written, and put on shows and have each one be different, and just to be able to, I think we're all, one thing we're very fortunate with is, without having known each other for, you know, just having kind of come together at this quick moment to have all these people that are into long relationships, it's a very lucky thing. Because then you get to higher level, higher planes of communication and higher planes of, you know, every time you accomplish another thing, it gets, there's another plane. You've kind of elevated again, and it kind of keeps going up. It doesn't stay this way or go down. It just kind of keeps going up, and that's a long relationship thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a question that Cameron asks in the movie, and it never gets answered in so many words. And let me throw it out. I mean, it's, how did the last 10 years happen and how did you survive? I know that's impossibly broad, but, you know, Mike, can you speak to that?
Wow. Well, with a lot of careful effort and talking to each other, I think, and hopefully having as clear lines of communication and open lines of communication between each other as possible. And that's still an effort, but I think we take the time to want to find solutions for the stuff that goes on in our band, if there's issues and problems and things, because I think we love each other, and I know we love each other, and I know I love playing music with these guys, so there's love and there's understanding and there's commitment, I think, and all of those kind of things that have helped us, and a lot of luck too, probably, and some timing.
Mm-hmm. Cameron, I was talking to somebody about this movie last night, and she was saying, well, it sounds fascinating, but where does this fit in Cameron Crowe's career?
I mean, the top.
Thank you, Eddie. I agree.
So where does it fit in your career?
You know, I've always just wanted to be lucky enough to tell a good story. And I always felt the story of Pearl Jam is a great story. And it's beyond just a rock story. In fact, it takes the usual rock story and turns it on its head. The usual rock story is incredible promise, brilliance maybe, tragedy cuts it short. And aren't we sad that we've lost this wonderful opportunity? Pearl Jam is exactly the opposite. It's a tragedy that was surmounted, and these guys found joy through survival.
and from studying what had happened before in rock with some of their heroes. And in some ways, it was a hard story to tell because it's a happy ending, and it's not even an ending. But what it is unique. And all these guys, I think you can tell, approached their interviews open-heartedly, wanted to just put everything out on the table. And even Jeff said early on, I hope there's a little bit of group therapy that happens here so I can learn a little bit about my band. And, you know, every one of these guys, Mike, you know, just poured his heart out. And we just, all of us, I think, wanted to tell the story of how the music came to mean so much today and tomorrow. And so I'm just lucky enough, I had the opportunity to help tell the story.
So Jeff, was there group therapy in there? Did you learn about your band?
Well, you know, I was listening to what Mike said earlier about how we've, you know, been able to get through things by talking and stuff. And, you know, really that first 5 or 6 years, there wasn't a lot of talking. A lot of times we would just put our heads down and kind of get to the next place and kind of look at one another. And, you know, we were just kind of holding on. I don't remember a whole lot of conversations about what we were going through at the time because we didn't know what we were going through. And I think that's the beauty of watching this movie and kind of trying to make sense a little bit of that, you know, that first 5 to 10 years. And but I haven't seen all the interview stuff of. But that was the thing that I got excited about when Cameron said, "I want to interview you guys," and I was like, you know, I was just curious, like good and bad, like to hear, you know, Stone say they didn't want to be in a band with me anymore, and that stuff was all good because when that was all going down, we weren't talking with one another. We'd take a bike ride every day, like after Andy died, and we'd hang out for 2 or 3 hours, but we really wouldn't really talk about anything, you know. And I would sort of know, you know, I would prod, like, "Hey, I heard you're playing some music," and he'd be like, "Yep." it's been great to see a little bit of what, you know, just how we feel about one another, because I think we occasionally tell each other, but you know, we're guys.
See, this is they had to pry this movie out of my hands. This could have easily been Pearl Jam 22 or 3, because this is like. This is great. And I actually, watching the movie tonight, I thought, damn, I had a great opportunity to ask Eddie a question, and I blew it.
Ask him now.
Okay. When you're on the plane...
Hey, who made you... What?
Okay. Director's cut. Thank you. When you're on the plane coming up from San Diego to Seattle for the first time, like, what are you thinking? Are you thinking it could go either way, or are you thinking, I know in my heart this is going to work?
I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm on a plane. I offered to drive. Who are these guys that can afford a plane ticket? Wow. That's what I was thinking.
Wow. Okay, director's cut.
And
this is good.
And maybe, and then like, well, no, I wouldn't say that. I was going to say, don't fuck this up. But no, didn't I? I took a razor blade. That's back when you can bring razor blades on planes. Because I would do collages from the... I did some crazy collage, and I was just excited to play music. I'd been in a few different groups with some people that... You know, the nature of being in bands, you try to write stuff, or you play some covers, or do whatever, and you have stylistically try to figure... But it never felt like anything real. It never felt like anything that wasn't... highly derivative of something else. And when I had heard the music that I got through Jack Irons, which is the demo stuff, that instrumental stuff that Matt Cameron had played on, it was I just heard something that I had never heard before. And to be able to be part of that and really not knowing what would happen, you know, I thought I would have a week in Seattle, and it was like an art project, just like the Razorblade collage. It was just like an art project.
Well, I think we can open it up to some audience questions. Right.
Hi, cool. How are you? Juan Carlos from Mexico. Mexico. I would like to know, at this point of your career, how do you feel? How do you see maybe 10 years from now, still playing, doing something else?
I think the same thing, just better. You know, I think we'll just keep getting better. and maybe just try to push the boundaries musically. I don't see stopping. I don't think any of us see stopping. And I think everyone's doing things outside of the group, too, which I think is really healthy. So by the time we get back, we're excited to be back. You know, to not, you know, some groups will have, like, a record, and then they'll tour for 2.5 years, and then they'll need to take 2 years off because they don't want to see each other, or they're just so wrecked and exhausted. And I think whatever way we're doing it, you know, it's still kind of reaching out in the dark, but it seems to be working. So it's not like you have a formula, but you've got something that you know. We just want to stay healthy. We have families. We want to just we want to be dependable to not only our each other, but, you know, the audience.
So Cameron said that, covered you when you study rock. Do you still study rock? And do you see yourselves in the point where your career or getting there where you guys are like Neil Young, where you're the out to some young up-and-coming band?
I'm up to the L's. I'm the laws and the whole. Yeah. If you're talking about a young group. But really, that was a huge thing, was, you know, when we didn't know how to get through, Jeff was saying it was hard for us to talk to each other, or, you know, some of the people that broke open those conversations or gave us advice on things that you can't teach or you can't take a class or you can't, but it was really them talking outside of the interviews, outside of the things that were available, but people from, like, Tom Petty for Mike, or Neil, or Kim and Thurston from Sonic Youth, or Pete and Roger for me, or John, you know, all these groups, they really, for some reason, were grateful that they kind of saw in us something that they recognized and thought, you know, these guys might need a little help, and that they're worth helping. So we're... Yeah. We've always been grateful.
Hi, I'm Jessica from Billboard. You know, all of this has been like a really big deep dive into the last 20 years. The book goes really, really far. The movie goes into all the things. At the festival last weekend, you kind of said that it all kind of makes you feel like it's a rebirth, that it's like a new beginning, and you played this new song then, and you just debuted a new song now. Was that part of the reason? Like, all this looking back was... has galvanized you to move forward as well?
Yeah. I mean, you know, being in the middle of this a few months ago, we carved out, we only had a little bit of time off, like maybe a few weeks, and we carved out half of that time to go in the studio and record some new songs, and that sort of kind of got us through all this looking back part. Like, it sort of reminded us, you know, the job at hand, like what, you know, where we're headed, and yeah, you know, that's the funnest thing. That's the funnest thing at this point, is getting in a room with these guys and making music. It's just the greatest. You're like, so curious about, you know, what everybody's going to come in with and where it's going to go. And so,
Stephen Dodd from Plastic Rock. Can I ask Cameron? Did you ever have any almost famous moments where the friend of the band got in the way of making a dramatic movie about it? You know, did you have to censor yourself on personal?
It's a good question. What I wanted to do is use the fact that I did know them and have known them for a while to do interviews that felt like actual conversations as opposed to interviews. So I think knowing them and having kind of lived in the community with them for long periods of time, I think I was able to hold a mirror up and show them how they looked to me as somebody that had been able to watch them over a period of time. And so I appreciate you guys trusting me enough to go through all the footage and hold this mirror up. But it's different in this case because I wanted to get across a feeling of what it was like, what it would be like to be inside the band as opposed to outside the band looking in. So I think it was a plus.
Okay. On that question, this line from Almost Famous where you, about a mid-level band, you're not mid-level, but a mid-level band struggling with their own limitations and hard space to start on.
Right.
There's kind of, similarities there. Can you talk about the relationship of these two movies, Almost Famous and Pearl Jam? Like, are they cousins type thing? Or?
I think they are, actually. I think Almost Famous is about loving music and being a fan. And I think Pearl Jam 20 is what it's like to be a fan in the band. And from their point of view, looking out at the William Millers of the world. And Almost Famous is the other side of that.
And I played leads on both of them.
That's true. That is true.
Go ahead.
Another question for
the uniting force, Mike McCready.
Kerry Roberts from Filmography on Movie Central, Hi-Fi member since 2005. I want to ask Cameron, of course we see in the film that you use the band in the movie Singles, and of course we see the promotional party and the incident that happened there, and of course the soundtrack had Pearl Jam songs, kind of launched the group to a large audience. Did that change the relationship between you and the band when that happened and the band really just broke out?
Well, mercifully, no. I think I was always so embarrassed about the singles party, I have to say. Like, the fact that I had to ask, really beg, and say, please come and play this show because they won't put out my movie unless you play this show. I came on Lollapalooza, and the guys had already heard that I was going to come
begging.
You didn't
even know how embarrassing it was going to get.
Oh, my God. It was something that's like, in a world where I feel I can talk with these guys about anything, that thing we never brought up for 20 years to each other. And so when we interviewed the guys, I brought it up with cameras. And there's a moment where Eddie looks at me like, oh, great. Now we talk about the singles party with a camera here. And it was cathartic for me, I have to say, to get through it. Because
I think we owe you an apology. Because,
oh, no, no, no.
I mean, the fact that, you know, that this was your moment and that, you know, that we just, you know, lesser people would have just said, you guys are assholes. You know,
no.
This is my chance. This is, you know, can you, you know, lay off the tequila for another hour before we go out there and, you know, just say a couple of nice things and play a show? God,
well, the original idea, and I love that we're now actually really talking about it. The original idea was an acoustic set, right? You guys were like we're going to play an acoustic set. It's going to be kind of like unplugged. And I remember Stone came up to me at a certain point. Stone already saw the avalanche that was starting to happen. And Stone was like, I think we're going to do a punk rock set tonight. And then it went from there. But I got to say, nobody died. And
it goes great in the film.
It works in the movie. And I leaned forward to Kelly when we were watching the movie tonight and was like, 20 years later, yes, it all worked out. But at the time, I was so, you know, it was a quandary because I didn't want to be one of the guys after the band had started to explode coming to ask for something. But I love the way Stone talks about it in the movie where he says this hideous event actually was the birth of No. So we gave it a context.
So we only have time for one more.
Actually, two quick questions. One is, I just saw the Paul McCartney film, and he's strolling around New York saying hello to everyone. He even says at one point, you know, he feels like the mayor. He jumps out of a cab, he goes for a walk. You, on the other hand, are a reluctant rock star.
Well, you got to understand it was different then. It was really, I don't know how people do it these days. I don't know how the young people or the people that have all that media thing, and then the media is way more intense and social bullshit, whatever it is. I don't even know how they deal with it. Paparazzi, that's something that I can't even fucking imagine for a second. And what we had at the time was too much for me as a human and even as a writer to not be able to walk into a situation and observe because you were being observed. I mean, 20 years later, I'm not still moaning about it. It's just that you asked. but through the, you know, we just had to figure out ways to where, you know, if you're on the music channel and you're in people's living rooms and all that on a, you know, many times a day back then, you know, we had to take responsibility for that, and it was more just kind of manicuring it, you know, like a level that you could deal with, because it's all pretty positive. But then again, that it was interesting because it was almost like the crowd laughed tonight. I don't know if they understood. There are photos of that car, that truck crash, with the woman inside it, you know, bloody, and it was incredibly serious deal. That was the day of the Grammy Awards. So that's where your life was at that time. And it was then you're thinking, okay, what the fuck is going on here and how are we going to survive this? Where is it going to go next or something? So by paying attention to it and, you know, now I'm really proud that we've all have lives that we can live and be who we want to be. And be who we want to be as parents, and be who we want to be as community members, and it's all just a very maintainable level. And we're very grateful to the people that have listened to us over the years that they seem to have a certain respect for that, and allow us that as well. It's a relationship, and we couldn't do it without them and without their understanding, which we're very appreciative.
Yeah, I think we need to wrap it up on that note.
I talked too long on that. Thanks.
All right, thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.